In just a moment, enjoy the All-American Sports Show. First, we'd like to remind you that weekdays, this NBC station entertains you royally. For quiz, there's a trio of top shows, Red Benson's Phrase That Pays, and our two newest additions, Second Chance and It Pays to Be Married. There's great comedy with Bob Hope, interesting guests with Dave Garraway and Tom Bartlett's Welcome Travelers, and the accurate reporting of NBC's Pauline Frederick and Morgan Beatty with his News of the World. Right now, though, it's the All-American Sports Show on NBC.
The All-American Sports Show. The National Broadcasting Company presents a colorful new dramatic series, The All-American Sports Show, dedicated to those figures in the world of sports who, by their example, have upheld in American sports the traditions of courage, bravery, sportsmanship, and honor. To tell us tonight's story, here is your sports reporter, Joe Hassel.
Just a few hours ago in Chicago, the Football Writers of America met, and they voted their annual award to the man whose story we tell tonight, General Robert Neyland, the head football coach at the University of Tennessee, who retires next week. We are proud to present this documentary of a man who is recognized as one of the greatest football coaches of all time. It all began on a gloomy Labor Day, September the 6th, 1926. 32 football candidates at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville reported to the gymnasium. A tall, erect man with military bearing was introduced to them by the chairman of the athletic council.
Boys, as you know, Tennessee's record in football recently hasn't been anything to crow about. This year, I'm hoping we'll do a little better. Last year, Captain Robert Neyland came down from West Point as ROTC instructor and assistant coach. This year, he'll serve as head coach. Captain Neyland.
We will practice 2 hours and a half each day. That's all. Each practice will be organized. We will know in advance what we want to accomplish each day, and we'll work with full speed. I will not run a play in a game until it has been run at least 500 times in practice. Any questions? Okay. Let's get to work.
And so began Tennessee's rise to football power under the leadership of the man who was to become the most feared coach in the Southern Conference. Behind this rise lies a human story. The story of a man who operated on the principle that knowledge is power. A scientist who manipulated the hearts and muscles of young men until they became one of the most formidable football machines in history. The story really begins at West Point Military Academy in 1914.
Come in.
Cadet Neyland reporting as ordered, sir.
Stand at ease, mister.
Thank you, sir.
Neyland, I've summoned you to my office on a rather unpleasant matter.
Yes, sir.
Your first year at the academy, you've had an excellent record, particularly in the sciences. I see, too, that you're a pitcher on the baseball team.
Yes, sir.
Have you anything to say with regard to the matter at hand?
Only this, sir. I had nothing to do with the hazing of Cadet Roberts.
You were in the quadrangle at the time?
Yes, sir.
And I'm afraid you'll have to take your punishment with the others. Even if you weren't involved, it was your duty to report the matter.
Yes, sir.
I'm setting you down. You'll work for 2 hours each Wednesday and Saturday. Furthermore, your athletic activities for the next 9 months will be confined to those inside the gymnasium.
But, sir, the baseball...
Our object at the point is to make good soldiers, not professional ball players, mister. Dismiss.
Yes, sir.
Bob Neyland was not the sort to let this throne. Confined to his gymnasium for 9 months with typical scientific application, he decided to master the manly art of self-defense. At the end of that period, he was so good at boxing that he became Academy heavyweight champion. Then, having missed the baseball season, he went out for football. He became a brilliant end. And the following year, he returned to the diamond. And in spite of his late start, he became one of the most sensational college pitchers ever developed. His academy record still stands. 35 victories, 20 in a row, and only 5 defeats. In his senior year, he was pitching against Navy when...
Now batting for Army, pitcher Bob Nealon.
Hit it out of the park, Bob. Here's the windup. The pitch. Oh, something's wrong. The pitch hit him in the head. He's unconscious. Here comes the doctor.
Take it easy, Bob.
What happened?
You were knocked unconscious. You'll be all right.
What's the score?
Navy's leading by 2.
What inning?
5th. You'd better get down to the shower.
I'm a bat.
You're hurt.
I feel okay. Let me stay, Doc.
Well, I suppose it won't hurt you.
Good. Let's get back to the game.
Bob Nealon continued in the game and proceeded to defeat the midshipman in his usual brilliant fashion. Later, he was summoned again to the commandant's office.
You sent for me, sir?
The last time I sent for you, it was to set you down. This time is to read you a message I just received.
Message, sir?
Let me read it. Would you kindly express to the pitcher on the Academy baseball team my admiration of his courage? I saw the game he pitched against Annapolis, and I was much pleased with his pluck. Signed, Newton D. Baker, Secretary of War. My congratulations, Mr. Nealon.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, before you go.
Sir?
You'll be graduating soon, Nealon. I understand you've received some offers from professional baseball teams.
Yes, sir.
Do you mind telling me what teams?
New York Giants, Detroit Tigers, Philadelphia Athletics, sir.
Pretty good. Well, have you decided what you want to do?
Yes, sir. I'd like to do graduate work in engineering, become an Army engineer.
You could have a very lucrative career in athletics, Nealon. You've been a star boxer, one of the best ends we've had, and a star baseball player.
Yes, sir, but I'd rather study engineering.
Oh, I see. You'd rather use your brain.
After graduation, Nealon's plans were interrupted by war. He served in France and then returned to the States to study engineering at MIT. It looked as if his athletic ability was going to be completely wasted, much to the disappointment of his friends, including Ike Eisenhower, with whom he had played football at West Point. But Nealon couldn't escape from his own interest in sports. He was reassigned to West Point, where he spent 4 happy years as aide to General Douglas MacArthur, then commandant of the academy. As a hobby, he served as assistant coach on the West Point football team. Finally, his 4-year tour of duty ended. Why, and then he left. And he discussed his plans with a senior officer before leaving.
Well, Nealon, have you decided yet what sort of assignment you're going to accept?
Yes, I've applied for duty as ROTC training officer at the University of Tennessee.
Tennessee? How'd you happen to pick that one?
They don't have a very good football team.
I'm afraid I don't follow you.
Well, I've been assistant coach here at West Point for 4 years. During that time, I've developed a few theories of my own about playing the game. I'd like to try them out. The ROTC job at Tennessee specifies that I'd also act as assistant coach of the football team. And since it's a losing team, I'll have a chance to test some of my theories.
I'm interested in knowing what these theories consist of.
It's really quite simple. I believe that you win a war because your soldiers are better trained than the enemy soldiers. Because your information is accurate and your command is based on sound principles. I think you can win a football game on the same basis. I believe that a poor play, perfectly executed, is better than a perfect play, poorly executed.
In 1925, Bob Nealon reported to the University of Tennessee and began his career as assistant football coach. 5 months later...
Order, gentlemen, order. As chairman of the Athletic Committee of the University of Tennessee, I call this meeting to order. As you all know, we're here today to meet our new head coach, Captain Nealon, and to discuss the athletic situation at Tennessee, which hasn't been exactly encouraging. Captain Nealon?
I'm not much of speech-making, gentlemen. I've outlined a few conclusions I've reached after my 5 months here at Tennessee. We need prompt action on the following things. 1, good assistance. To this end, I've requested 2 of my former Army associates, Major William Britton, Colonel Paul Parker, to come to Tennessee. 2, better material. I've already outlined a scouting system which will enable us to pick the best of the high school crop here in the South. Three, we need some team spirit here on the Hill. I'll work on this. Four, expansion of the stadium. Now, I've drawn an engineering sketch which will provide for 17 rows of concrete seats on the east side of the stadium, boosting our capacity to 6,800. Thank you.
Captain Nealon.
Sir?
This is a very elaborate and far-reaching plan you've drafted, but before we go rushing off to carry it out, don't you think it'd be a good idea to win a few football games?
Sir, we play this Saturday. I've drilled the team very thoroughly. We now have the power and the knowledge to win by 2 touchdowns.
After that speech by Bob Nealon, one of the few he ever made in which he predicted a victory, the campus began to buzz.
Have you heard about this new football guy, Nealon? He says we're going to win Saturday.
Well, maybe he knows something.
I hear he holds secret practice with the boys.
He's trying to run the team like he run an army. He's even got a couple of colonels and majors as assistant coaches.
The result of the game? Tennessee won 13-0. The following week, Nealon's boys beat North Carolina 34-0. And the coach went on to win 8 and lose only 1 that season. Before the semester had ended, the athletic committee called another session.
Captain Nealon, the athletic committee has decided to go ahead with your plans for building an addition to the Tennessee Stadium.
While the Masons were building the stadium, Bob Nealon was building the team that was to take him through his first undefeated season in 1927. He summoned his assistant coach, Bill Britton, and laid his plans.
Britt, how's the scouting system working?
So far, so good, Major. We've got a boy Wake Forest has been after for some time. I think I've persuaded him to come to Tennessee instead.
What's his name?
McEver. Gene McEver.
Gene McEver. A name that was destined to become one of the great ones in American football. The day he stepped out on the field, the famed, flaming sophomores of Tennessee were born. Nealon's team developed into a high-powered, ultra-confident troop of athletes, and McEver made All-American. Bobby Dodd, Buddy Hackman, and a host of hardy linemen rolled through 1928 and 29 undefeated. In 1930, the entire nation waited for Tennessee to field another great football aggregation under the leadership of Bob Nealon.
Sure bet for the Rose Bowl this year.
Yeah, I hear that Gator season over $100,000 a game.
They're going to build a bigger stadium this year.
You seen those new juniors, Herman Hickman and Ray Saunders? Man, they play football.
Enthusiasm was at fever pitch just before the famous Alabama game that year. But then misfortune struck. Crippling injuries hit at the big men of the team.
All right, easy now. Hold that door open. Hey, get the coach.
How are you, Gene?
Okay, I guess.
Ooh, take it easy, old.
Britt, what happened?
McEver hurt his leg again.
Well, get the doc.
Is it bad? Looks like a shattered knee, Major. I don't think this boy's ever going to play football again.
Oh, Branton hug out, now McEver. Alabama next on the schedule. We're not in good shape.
That was an understatement. Alabama rolled over Tennessee. And only brilliant coaching saved the rest of the season from becoming a shambles. Next season, the outlook was even more bleak as McEver hobbled out onto the field wearing a brace on one leg.
Major, look at McEver. He's come out for the team in a leg brace.
No lack of guts in that boy.
I guess I'll have to ease him off. We can't let him play that way.
Wait a minute. I want to talk to him.
Okay. Gene.
Yeah?
Come over here.
Oh, okay. Hi, Major.
Hello, McEver. How are you feeling?
Never better. I can get around fine in this thing.
Hurt much?
Well, did you watch me?
Looked pretty good.
Sure, I'm fine, Major. Why, in a couple of months...
You really want to play, McEver?
I really do, Major.
In that case, you better get out there and scrimmage. You know I like my boys in top condition.
Major.
Yeah?
Thanks.
All right, get going.
Yes, sir.
Are you serious, Major?
Yes, I am.
He'll be a liability.
Britt, when I first started in this business, I used to think that a winning football team was like a machine. If it was strong enough and smart enough, you won. It was all science, bloodless.
Isn't it?
No. There's something else goes into it, Britt.
Such as?
It's what makes Gene McEver come out with a brace on his leg. It's an intangible quality that electrifies a team when they haven't got the faintest prayer of winning. Makes them perform a miracle. I've seen it happen too many times to deny its existence.
Well, what's this got to do with McEver playing?
McEver has that quality. He transmits it to the rest of the team. But don't think I'm a softy. Just think of what effect his playing will have on the rest of the team.
You still need power to win.
If you don't have power, you've got to find substitutes. We'll find them. I've got a few ideas already. Tomorrow morning, I'm issuing new uniforms.
Well, what's wrong with the old ones wearing out?
The old ones aren't wearing out. That's what's wrong with them. I'm issuing paper-thin jerseys that won't last through a rough game.
I don't get it, Major.
You will. Also, I want those heavy shoes changed. From now on, the backs and ends will wear low shoes, like tennis shoes, only with cleats.
Oh, Major, if it makes sense to you, it makes sense to me. But I wish we had a healthy team instead.
Bob Neyland was about as crazy as a grandfather fox. On their new shoes, the volunteers were fast as lightning that season. The paper-thin jerseys came away in the hands of eager tacklers, making the runner as slippery as an eel. And the great team McEver plunged, passed, and inspired his way to All-American on one leg. The volunteers emerged unbeaten, and the Neyland legend was engraved in football history. But it didn't continue for long. In 1935, Bob Neyland received a telegram from the War Department.
That's it, Britt. They want me to report for a 3-year hitch of active duty in Panama.
Well, you could resign from the Army, Major.
It would mean throwing away all my years of Army training. No, football's just a hobby anyway. I'm an Army engineer, not a professional coach.
But football was in Bob Neyland's blood. 1 year after his assignment to Panama, he retired from the Army and came back to coach the volunteers once again. In 2 years, he had whipped the Tennessee team back into shape, and he raced through 1938 undefeated and untied. In 1939, he was undefeated, untied, and unscored upon. In 1940, he was again undefeated and untied. In 1941, the United States entered World War II. This time, Bob Neyland had a more serious choice to make. We were playing for keeps. This was no training job in Panama.
Well, Britt, this time it's goodbye to football.
I wonder. You said that when you went to Panama.
This is war, and it isn't being fought on a gridiron.
As usual, football soon caught up with Bob Neyland. He was ordered on temporary duty as coach of the Army All-Star football team that was scheduled to play professional teams in a war bond exhibition. Nobody dreamed that Neyland, with 5 weeks of training, could whip a conglomerate mass of unconditioned athletes into a winning combination. But they hadn't reckoned on Bob Neyland. His makeshift team whipped the New York Giants on Saturday, shellacked the Brooklyn Dodgers the following Wednesday, and lost by only a single touchdown to the Chicago Bears. Neyland hadn't joined the Army to field a football team, however, and he managed to locate himself in Kunming, China, and then in Calcutta, where he became chief of the service of supply for the entire China-Burma-India Theater. In 1946, Neyland was discharged from the Army. And now he faced the most critical period of his career.
General Neyland, welcome back to the university.
Thanks.
I hope you're ready to rear back and pass a few football miracles.
I've never been much for passing miracles when hard work can accomplish the same results.
It'll take an awful lot of it to switch over to the T formation.
What makes you think I'm going to switch to the T?
Well, I just assumed it. After all, the single wing has been pretty outmoded since you left.
There's nothing new about the T formation. I tried it back in 1926. It was flashy, but it wasn't any better than the single wing.
Of course, it's up to you, General, but frankly, a lot of your fellow coaches are shifting to the T formation.
The more teams that stampede to the T formation, the better I'm going to like it. As long as I'm coaching, Tennessee is going to stick to the system I've tested and know best. I may lose some football games until the squad is built up. But eventually, I think we'll hit our stride.
Bob Neyland stuck to the single wing, and he took the worst shellacking of his football career. In 1947 and 48, T Tennessee lost regularly to the same teams they used to beat so badly. It wasn't long before the fans were screaming for the replacement of Bob Neyland as head coach.
Alabama 10, Tennessee nothing.
Well, there goes the ball game. Looks like Neyland is losing his touch.
Score, Duke 19, Tennessee 6.
Why don't they get a younger man?
Score, Mississippi 43, Tennessee 13.
Why does he stick to the single wing? He'll never win a game again.
When the sports writers asked Neyland if he expected to field a better team, he walked up to the blackboard and drew a large 50 on it.
Gentlemen, it takes time to build a football team and train it properly. We'll have a good team in 1950.
Bob, why knock your head against a stone wall? Look, we've got a comfortable place in Florida. Let's get out and relax down there. Things have changed, that's all.
Peg, I said that in 1950, I was going to have a winning team. If I'm wrong, then everything I've learned about football in the past 20 years is a farce. Wrong or right, I'm going to stick to it.
Bob Neyland was having other troubles, too. Football had changed in more ways than one. War-weary GIs were tired of discipline, tired of taking orders. The game was more commercial. Tennessee had no backlog of young players. The coaches knew it, the fans knew it, and the players knew it.
Come in.
General Neyland?
Yes?
As you know, I was one of the varsity backs last year.
Yes, of course. Counting on you in this year's lineup.
Well, I figured you might be, General. That's why I came in to talk to you.
Sit down.
Thanks.
What's up?
Well, I'll be very blunt about it. Tennessee's in the spot this year, and the team needs experienced men. Now, I'm one of the top players on the squad, and I like to play, but I need money.
Southeastern Conference allows you $10 a month for laundry and spending money.
I need $70 a month.
I'm afraid...
$70, or I don't play.
Listen, son, I won a conference championship once with a fullback who played with one leg in a brace. I never paid a penny to a man to play on my team, and I'm not starting now. I'll give you to 1 o'clock to be packed and off this campus.
The scoffers said that Neyland was whistling in the dark, that he wouldn't do any better in 1950 than he did in 48. And when, in 1950, Neyland lost his second game of the season to Mississippi State, they said he should have retired back in 1947. But Bob Neyland, with his uncanny knack of predicting the future, was not wrong. Tennessee didn't lose another game that year. The following year, they went on to win Bob Neyland his first national championship. In 52, he lost only a single game. And now the sports writer said that nothing could stop his Tennessee Volunteers. They had been invited to the Cotton Bowl. They looked like a sure thing. But as it sometimes will, fate intervened. Bob Neyland had divided his energy, his time, and his health between the service of his country and the game he loved. Each had demanded much of him, perhaps a little more than the frail machinery of the human body can endure.
General Neyland.
Yes, Doctor?
Would you step inside, please?
Yes, sir.
Have a seat.
Thank you.
I have the reports on your x-rays and on the blood tests we made, General.
And?
Well,
Let's have it, Doctor.
General, I'm afraid you'll have to retire.
That serious?
It could be. With rest and the proper treatment...
We play at the Cotton Bowl on New Year's Day. I'd like to handle the team for that game.
I'm afraid not, General.
I see. How long, Doctor?
At least a year of rest.
When Tennessee trotted on the field on New Year's Day, Bob Neyland was a spectator. And behind his team, which might be his last team, was the legend of All-American play created by such football greats as Gene McEver, George Cafego, Bob Suffrage, Hank Lorasella, Dick Huffman. And all across the nation, men who had played for Neyland awaited the outcome of the game.
You couldn't play for or against Bob Neyland without learning something.
I still coach exactly as he coached me. He always knew exactly what to do to win a football game.
Yes, some of the greatest names in football played for him. And many are top coaches today. Bowden Wyatt of Arkansas, Bobby Dodd at Georgia Tech, Bob Woodruff of Florida, Murray Warmoth at Mississippi State, Bill Meek at Kansas State. A sports writer once said that any man who has ever played for Neyland knows more about the game than the average coach. No wonder Bob Neyland is one of the greatest. And perhaps the finest compliment ever paid to him was when Tennessee played Texas in the 1951 Cotton Bowl game. Governor Alan Shivers of Texas summed it up by saying,
"Tennessee gave us Sam Houston and Davy Crockett. We gave Tennessee Bob Neyland. Things are now about even."
Now here is the governor of the state of Tennessee with a proclamation especially recorded today.
Whereas the athletic powers of our great institution of learning, the University of Tennessee, has become legendary in the nation from coast to coast and bowl to bowl. And whereas the honored name of volunteers has received added fame and recognition through the accomplishments of the Sons of the Hill on the 100-yard field of battle, and whereas the guidance, inspiration, and masterful direction in the creation of great and powerful football organizations for our university has been provided to a formidable degree by one man, and whereas this heroic son of our sister state of Texas has fully repaid a debt owed to Tennessee by Texas since the loan of that great Tennessean and Texan by adoption, Sam Houston, and whereas this soldier of the cannon in war and warrior of the gridiron and knight of the diamond and gladiator of the ring in peace, since his multi-honored exploits at the United States Military Academy, has devoted priceless time, unlimited energy, and a unique mind to bringing even newer and greater glory to Tennessee and her sons, and whereas after a quarter of a century of service for the youth of Tennessee, in which he has set a record of victory unparalleled in the athletic annals of the nation, and has earned a place of rest with laurels in the gratitude of his fellow citizens. Now, therefore, I, Frank G. Clement, governor of the state of Tennessee, do hereby call upon the people of the state of Tennessee to pay due homage and honor to Robert Reese Neyland, eminent athletic director of the University of Tennessee, and further, I do direct that August 18th, 1953, be set aside as General Neyland Day throughout the state of Tennessee. We are proud of Tennessee. We are proud of our football teams. We are proud of the title volunteer. We hope to continue to provide clean sportsmanship for the people of the entire nation as a means of recreation for all and as guidance for youth in the light of a great God and a great country for the benefit of all mankind.
And so, next Tuesday at the Cherokee Country Club in Knoxville, Tennessee, from far and wide, they will pay tribute to the man we have saluted tonight, Bob Neyland.
Listen again next week for another colorful, dramatic story when the All-American Sports Show salutes Lou Gehrig. This has been an NBC Radio Network presentation. Tonight's program was written by George Lefferts, directed by Fred Way, with music by Paul Taubman. Wendell Holmes was heard as General Neyland. This is Ray Barrett speaking.
Each weekday, hear Morgan Beatty with the news of the world on NBC.